Everyone, happy Monday. Guess who got corona?
Not me.
It was Nate.
Yeah, but we don't actually know if you got corona or not.
It was definitely Nate.
You could have just gotten sick.
It could have been a flash fever.
Still flu season, you know?
It is flu season, albeit I have not gotten the flu in many a year.
It looks many like it was just missing you then, passed. You know?
I know. Yeah. And all of a sudden, this virus. I have a question. Do you know about this whole facility that like makes flus and viruses and diseases, and then it releases it into the public, and then
what?
They create antibiotics so that people have to pay for them after they've released said diseases. Yes. There's literally a thing. I don't remember what it's called. Let me look it up. But there is a rumor of spreading
that disease-making group. This is what I'm looking up. Group conspiracy. If you put conspiracy behind it, you get all the good stuff. Conspiracy. Enter.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I swear. What'd you find?
Conspiracy beliefs about the origin of HIV/AIDS in something. I'm just going to click on it. Let's see what I can find quick.
Yeah. I'm also looking for disease release facility. I swear it exists. I learned about this in college, no joke.
Hmm.
Ugh.
I don't know.
Infectious diseases and
believe it, people.
Facilities.
You heard it on chat box. It must be true. There's evil people.
Oh, I'm
that
so
make
frustrated. I almost
want to
restart. I want to restart this episode so I can look up this.
No, we're not restarting. Roll. No, don't roll the music because today's music. Thank you for another episode or tuning in for another episode of Chatbox Podcast. Today's music is called "Flow" by Tube Backer. Enjoy. Roll the music!
Roll it.
We are discussing Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Yes. Welcome to another book club by Chatbox, by Paula and me, myself, and I.
Nate. Yes, so Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. This book was written in the 1930s. Fun fact. I don't know if you could
1930s.
Tell. I know.
Depressing
I guess,
times then.
Yeah, literally. I don't know if you could tell by the way it was written, but it's a little old school for 2020 eyes.
It's, I don't know.
It's 900 years old. Or excuse me. Yeah, 9D. Wow, not 900.
Declaration of Independence. That's all old, but we still follow those. We just adjust how we would apply those things to modern 2020 things. I think you do the same with this book as well.
Yeah, what'd you think?
It was a good book. So I should give you context.
Okay.
As I already told you off the podcast, I will tell you on the podcast as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I didn't start reading the book until this morning.
300 pages, people. 300 pages that this man took on.
I got it done.
For the sole sake of your entertainment.
About 3.5-4 hours.
And for not disappointing me.
I started at, I think around 10. No, I started around 9. Yeah, I started around 9 and finished around 12:30, 1 o'clock. Yeah, good read, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. I downloaded Audible. I also had a physical copy of the book. Mm-hmm. I set Audible to 200% speed, and we just plowed right through it, you know? And I was like a sponge. I just absorbed as much of it as I could. I read along. Let me tell you, I read so much faster when I have something holding me accountable, like an Audible recording. And, like, I don't get distracted. Maybe I have ADHD, I don't know, or maybe just reading for me, is boring, especially because we have documentaries now that give you the same information.
So you're saying you're a visual learner.
You know, okay, I wish we could restart this episode so I could quote this right, but people remember 10% of what they read, 20% of what they hear, actually might be 10% what they hear, and 20% what they read, and like 30% what they see, and 100% of what they
feel
on a documentary.
Are you misquoting Maya Angelou, who said they may not remember what you say, but they'll remember how you made them feel?
No, there's actually a study done where people only remembered like certain percentages of whether they listened to it, read it, saw it, and or a combination of all those, you know. Hmm. I was reading a book and listening going along, and it was nice because an Audible recording kept me on track and kept me focused.
Mm-hmm. You had an auditorial. Yeah. You had a tactile touch with the book. You had a disciplinary figure.
I was in the zone. I really was.
Very good.
And I cranked it out 3.5-4 hours.
Well done. And you retained everything, I'm assuming.
Everything.
I had enough time to reflect.
I think like the biggest pattern of the book that I picked up on was, here's a principle of life. Here is a lesson. And here's 4 or 5 short stories that gives you an example of why I believe in this principle. And then in the end, it reminds you once again, this was the principle. And then next one, you know, and it had what, like 4 subcategories of sets of principles, you know?
Yeah. It's a very neat book.
I liked it though. It was, I will say, I think, you know, mm-hmm. rather than doing 4 or 5 short stories per example, I was a little thrown off by that because I heard so many stories within the period of 3.5 hours. I don't remember anyone.
There were many stories. To be honest. Yep.
Whereas I think if you just did one solid, very impactful story per lesson, you're more likely to remember 12 total stories rather than a potential 80 to 100 in a book.
Yeah. You know? So. Yeah, I would agree. I think, like, obviously, the whole, like, stories sell is kind of the thing about... I mean, it was written in the 1930s.
Right. There were just so many stories. Like, this book could have been condensed to maybe half its length.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also it felt like a little far-fetched. Like, I would agree overall, I do think this book was very valid. A little
far-fetched?
Mm-hmm. But I do think that
those are fighting words. I hope you're ready for this.
Definitely a bit of a visionary in terms of how everything, like, floats together. Like, some of the stories he said, like, yes, I can definitely see how that played out in your favor. That's great. But also, you sound like a straight white male living in a straight white male society in the 1930s. Why are you always
picking on my people? I don't understand.
Where things just kind of float together if you have a deep enough voice and broad enough shoulders, you know what I'm saying? Because there are also, like, I will say, like, this book also... I mean, like, it's it's good. It's always good to go back to the basics, but it's simplistic mm-hmm. in nature, which is the beauty of it. Too, and I do utilize a lot of these, you know, strategies with, like,
sure.
prior to even knowing about this book or reading it, but I have also seen these techniques crash and burn. So, you know, it's not a one fits all kind of case scenario. Sometimes it's not gonna land, you know what I'm saying?
Right. One thing that I thought was very interesting is that you know, obviously this was written 90 years ago.
Yeah.
it's almost like a common sense book. It's like, yeah, that makes sense, you know, and then it gives you examples, and it's like, oh, like, that works, you know, from time to time. Or, like, that's probably a better approach of being a nicer person, you know, being a better leader or being a better supervisor if you, you know, phrase it like this rather than like this, because your words matter. And it's just ironic that I feel like people of our age group and younger do not have these social skill sets at all. Like, I thoroughly believe, like, a book like this should be taught in high school. Whether that's an English class, or it should just be called general life skills or how to socialize class. Because there are so many kids younger than us who grew up on a cell phone or had a tablet as their babysitter, you know, that just don't have those social skill sets anymore. And, like, that's what I was thinking. Like, a lot of this book, I was always thinking about my own life and thinking about, like, I tried that before and it didn't work. I also tried that before and it didn't work. And then he was calling me out in some of these examples, I felt like, because I was reflecting upon myself in my own job role in my own work profession. Especially like the teacher ones, for example, when he was talking about like the teacher and the students and trying to influence the youth and the young people, and you got to give them what they want. You got to make them feel important based on their own value systems. That was a lot of, you know, applicable to my life or whatnot. But I do think overall, I think if everyone read this book and understood this book, there would be less conflict in the world. So, while yes, we can pick on the white straight male of Dale Carnegie, but I will say, I think his intent was pure.
Yes, I agree.
Maybe a little outdated, I agree. But I think the overall message is even more important today than it was in 1930s.
Wow.
I think he's a time traveler.
Wow.
Dale Carnegie, he knew where the world was headed, and so he jumped really back in time.
What was like?
And
the,
wrote a book.
Yeah, what was the biggest lesson you learned?
I think the most tangible things that I picked out of was either the leadership lessons in terms of like talking about managers in the workplace, and like how to motivate employees or how to support employees or better treat them per se, you know, rather than criticize people, you know, just say, I remember when I was your age, and like, yeah, you got to keep that in context, you know, like if when you were 19, you probably made a lot of stupid mistakes as well. And so taking that approach and, you know, saying, oh, like I did the same thing, like don't even worry about it. Let's just try to work on this moving forward. Like that's so much better moving forward, you know, or acknowledging an issue, for example, in a work relationship. Or another aspect that I really related on more was talking about like the teachers and student situations or even the parenting situations. Not that I have any kids, but it's just all related to my work.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, that does make sense. You know, like rules are rules, for example, but if the rules you're enforcing for the kids, if they don't care about the rules, they're not going to follow them, you know? So like, you got to find different strategies about how to also motivate them to follow the same rules, but give them a different value system, something that they value in order to follow them as well.
Yeah. I think something that he didn't even mention too was like explaining the reason for rules. Like there was that one scenario, I forget which, whatever rule he was trying to explain to, but like the boys who set up a fire in the woods and and like instead of like being angry and yelling at them, he was like,
right,
you boys, like you seem like you're having a great time, like what are you cooking, blah blah blah, all this stuff. Well, listen, like you boys seem like you've got some good heads on your shoulders, and I know you're gonna clean up after yourselves, but the fact of the matter is these like trees are old and they can catch a flame real quick and blah, blah, blah. And, I'm sure you'll like in the future decide to build a fire in a safer environment closer over to those hills there. So like, blah, blah, blah. There's no for fear or whatever, because the neighbors here would be nervous to see you guys having a blah, blah, blah. I don't know. A lot of old white man talk. And it was just, I forget again what the rule was, but it's just, like, explaining the whole reason why you're even talking to them, or, like, why you're enforcing a rule, like, instead of just saying, like, hey, like, this fire needs to be built over there, like, move, you, like, explain the reason, like, hey, guys, these trees are very flammable, like,
right.
Would you mind moving over your blah, blah, blah.
If I recall correctly, this was under the section, show respect for the other person's opinions, never say you're wrong. Because the next section that was following it was ironic enough. He said, if you are wrong, then admit to it quickly and emphatically.
Yes.
Because then he was using the same park example or saying something along the lines of walking his dog without a leash or a muzzle, you know, and the police yelling at him. Then he did the same thing next week, but then by him saying himself, you're right, I was wrong, I accept any fines, taking ownership, responsibility, that kind of thing. Then the police officer was like, oh, I'm sure the dog is sweet and cuddly and wouldn't hurt anyone. But then he was still insistent, like, no, but I was in the wrongdoing. You know, you told me last week, muzzle and leash my dog when walking the dog through the park. And then the police officer said something along the lines of, oh, go back over the hill where I can't see you, and I'll forget we ever had this conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
Because prior to that, he was talking to the boys with the fire in the park, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the approach that he was saying with that, you know. Like, I think that makes sense, you know. If you got to make the boys value, I mean, if you just tell them don't do that, then people feel bad about that, or they won't respect that command. Whereas if you say, oh, I remember when I was a young boy and I used to make lots of fires and we do camps and cookouts, yada, 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 you connect with them first, build rapport, and then influence them in the way you want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. But I can also see, like, nowadays, like, I feel like nowadays, like, if I were to go up to some boys and, like, say the exact same thing, they'd be like, yeah. And then and then I'd see them next week, like, building the same fire. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. Mm.
And I only say that because, like, I have experienced this kind of scenario.
Oh, please. On, like, let's dive into scales. This. Do more.
On lesser Give me an scales, example. Obviously. Like, there used to be, like, at our dance studio, there used to be, like, these guys who would, like, walk through our halls mm-hmm. and, like,
Why? Why were they there?
We don't know. But, like, we were nervous that they were going to steal from us because we didn't have mm-hmm. lockers or anything. Like, we just had mm-hmm. our bags out there.
And you weren't
there.
Allowed to bring your stuff into the studios?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, like, I'm pretty sure, like, our dance instructor came out and, like, was like, hey, boys, like, this is not a playground. We're trying to have a dance class. Would you mind playing outside or, like, going over to, like, this place?
Blah, Are blah, these blah. All the brothers and the boys who had to go to these dance classes?
No,
even though they weren't part
no,
of the dance
we
classes?
Had no idea who these kids were.
Hmm.
And they would still, like, run around, and then lo and behold, like, someone's stuff got stolen, like, next week. And then we had, like, the police show up and blah, 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 all this stuff. And
was it one of those boys who stole it?
I mean, we can only assume.
Ah! There's no hard evidence.
But they were the only ones. And also, they were the only ones. And it was the only time that I experienced
Were they the same ones
theft.
From the first week until the second week?
Yeah.
When the second week things got stolen, they were also the same boys that are the second week?
I mean, of course, yes. We live in a small town. Who else would find where our dance studio was?
Of
and also,
course,
who
yes.
else would have a vendetta against our dance studio?
But did anyone see it happen?
No, because if we saw someone steal our shit, we're going to stop them.
So we don't know who stole the stuff in the second week.
Exactly.
But you're making the assumption it was the same boys in the first
we
week
can
who were
make
told not to come back.
We can make a clear guess out of my, like, however many freaking years that I danced at that dance studio.
Uh-huh.
A week after someone reprimands the only people who ever found the dance studio per accident.
Mm-hmm.
Just so happen.
Mm-hmm.
Same day, same time as they were there last week.
Mm-hmm.
Seems awfully suspicious to me.
It may seem suspicious, but there's no due process. You can't just make that accusation without the evidence.
But also it'd be stupid to, like, not look at the facts.
No, of course. By all means, they might be suspects, but it doesn't mean they're guilty. Innocent till proven guilty. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I, by all means, I do empathize with you or your dancer friends who had their stuff stolen. I think stealing is a terrible crime. It's not a victimless crime. Obviously, someone's stuff gets taken away from them, and that's not right. Likewise, though, we can't just say, I don't like you. Make them responsible for something they may or may not have done.
That's exactly what I say to everyone. I just don't like you.
I don't like you, so please.
So,
that's a dangerous world.
Yeah. Let's go through each of the four categories and decide which was our favorite rule. Starting with techniques in handling people. We learned not to criticize, condemn, or complain. Mm-hmm. Give honest and sincere appreciation, or arouse in the other person an eager want.
Mm.
What do you think impacted you the most?
Number three, it's how I play every strategic game. I make them feel like they're going to win by making a deal with me, but then I win instead.
Oh, do tell. Now you give us an example.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Bucko.
So, I remember a vivid example.
Okay.
Here we go.
You so, asking me to be your girlfriend.
No. Do you remember the game Settlers of Catan?
Yeah.
Well, my family, we used to play a lot of board games, but that's been shifting a little bit recently as well, but... I'd probably say a couple years back, we were really, really huge into that game. Like, we played that a lot. Everyone liked it. Everyone, you know, somewhat enjoyed it or enough, you know, to an extent that everyone was happy with playing it as a whole family, that kind of thing. But my sister and I, whew, man, we were hot shots at that game. Let me tell you, if I didn't win, Taylor won. And if Taylor didn't win, then I won. I remember specifically... There was once upon a time where Taylor was about to win, and all she needed to do was just complete a couple more trades, except it was my mom's turn. And my mom, she just, like, tries to play, like, this innocent, neutral game because she can't take sides on one kid versus another kid, right? But I already did, like, you know, the calculations in my head. She had a couple, you know, undisclosed cards, which could be additional victory points, and then she had to just finish building a couple more things, either, like, take longest road or build a bigger army, which then gets her also more victory points, and the first one to get a certain number of victory points wins. And I remember I was only like 1 or 2 points away. She was also only 1 or 2 points away, but she had a couple of cards that were face down, so it could have been another 1 point. If it was all the points she needed, then she wouldn't have been playing anymore. She would have won already. So I knew she was like on game point. She just needed one more point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my mom's turn, and she was trading with people, and I was like, Mom, do not trade with her. because I knew if she traded with her, even though it affected none of my mom's game, because she just wants to play her own little thing, do, whatever. Mm-hmm. If she helped Taylor at all, then Taylor was going to win instantly. Now, I knew all I needed was for it to happen to be my turn so I could finish my buildings, get my victory points, and I would have won, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell Mom that. If I tell my mom, she's not going to care if I win, especially if it's, you know, if she makes this trade, Taylor wins, or if she doesn't make this trade, then I win. If we put her in a corner to pick one kid over the other kid, then she's just going to default to playing her own game because she's not going to pick one kid over the other, mm-hmm. right? And so I was begging my mom. I was telling her, if you don't do that trade, here's another strategy about like how you can better your own game. And like she was maybe sitting at like 4 or 5 points. She wasn't close enough to win. And so I was trying to convince her it'd be better for her game not to make that trade, even though it was actually better for my game for her not to make that trade. And I remember, oh, man, it got heated between me and my sister. Not in, like, a bad way or whatnot, but we both knew this was it. If that mm-hmm. trade makes it, like, I was accusing my sister, like, you're going to win if you do this. Like, don't do the blah, 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 you know. And, like, she was then making the case against me, saying, oh, he's just trying to distract you because it's his turn next, then he's going to win, which was actually the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not highlighting that. I'm trying to help my dear, dear old mother play her own game. So I couldn't help but chuckle reading that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a perfect example of arousing the other person an eager want, but I'm glad you won.
That's how you influence people. You got to make deals sound better for the other person. But then that's also how you win, because you make the deal sound better for the other person, even though they're actually better for you. But you don't highlight those portions. You only highlight the portions that are good for them.
I think your mom just played Switzerland. And she was like, oh, I just won't do any trades. And you guys can have it out against yourselves. Terrible.
No, she ended up trading and Taylor won.
Oh.
As I predicted.
And doesn't land.
Yeah, boom. So.
Well, interesting. That's honestly the third one. I want to be able to arouse in the other person an eager want. I think that would definitely be the most powerful skill.
That's what you do for work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think what I do best is probably give appreciation.
Good for you.
I think sometimes I'm a lover when I'm not being a fighter.
Sometimes.
Okay. Next up, six ways to make people like you. Number one, become genuinely interested in other people. Two, smile. Three, remember that a person's name is to that person the sweetest and most important sound in any language. Four, be a good listener, encourage others to talk about themselves. Five, talk in terms of the other person's interests. And then six, make the other person feel important and do it sincerely.
Those are all good ones.
Which one's your favorite?
You pick first. No, you pick first.
I pick first?
Yeah.
I think the one that struck me the most was smile, because I was like, that's just such an interesting, like, baseline.
I think it's a little deviant to smile in modern-day society. Like, walking by, it's like, hi, how are you? Really? You know, like, people are like, what do you want with me? Like, stay away.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't think so. I think, like, eye contact more specifically.
New York?
In New York, it's okay to smile. I think it's, like, eye contact specifically.
Sure.
Because, like, eye contact invites creepy people over.
Oh.
But, like, if it's too late and you, like, made eye contact with, like, a cash register or, like, whoever, it's okay to smile. I smile.
Good for you.
I'm a little Midwestern girl.
Good for
trying
you.
To make it in the big old city. I think that's the one that, like, stuck with me is, like, why did I read an entire chapter on this? But probably I think the one I'd want to do better with is make the other person feel important. I think that's a powerful skill.
Right.
And I think I do that through complimenting and talking in other person's interests and listening and smiling and being genuinely interested and all of the other skills. But, yeah. How about yourself?
Right. I think I've become more of a social introvert these last couple of years after graduating college. But I remember, like, res staff. this was the ultimate strategy, all of these in this entire chapter, to quote unquote build community. Like, as an RA, you genuinely had to care about your resident, you know, in order to do the job well. Whereas if you just had no care or interest at all, like, people catch on to that. They know when you're being authentic or when you're not being authentic. I think, like, remember that a person's name is the sweetest and most important sound in any language for them, you know? Like, the whole idea of inclusivity, making sure that you're inviting other people, making sure they're not necessarily being wallflowers or that they have a space to exist or they feel comfortable, you know, being there. Like, community development model at U of M, step one, get to know residents. Step two, help residents get to know each other. And then... you do that with, like, the association property, you know, like A equals B and B equals C. So A equals C. So you meet person A, you meet person C, and then you help form a relationship between A and C, and you're B in the middle as the RA, you know? And, like, that's how you build community and that kind of thing.
Boom.
And you had to do that by doing all of these, really, you know, becoming genuinely interested in other people. Yeah, get to know your residents, step one. Smile. You're an RA. This is a customer service kind of thing. You know, you're there to support students. Mm-hmm. Remember a person's name. I mean, that's just general get to know your residents. Be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. Show interest in your residents. You know, actually get to know who they are, where they're coming from, their major, what they want to do, blah, blah, blah. Talk in terms of the other person's interests. Ask them, hey, like, what do you want to get out of your college experience? Like, especially like first year communities. Like, you should get involved in groups and orgs and advertising, like the all clubs event that happens on the diag, you know, in the beginning of each term and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then make the other people feel important and do it sincerely. Just empowering students, you know, to empower themselves and build. Oh, number five, the community development model. Encourage students to take ownership of their own community. You know, like they can do that. Like they can get to know other people and build their own communities.
Did you just quote an RA model?
The community development model at University of Michigan. Step one, get to know your residents. Step two, help your residents get to know each other. Step three, assess the needs of the community. Step four, program to address those needs of the community. And then number five, empower your students to take responsibility and ownership and have them build their own communities within it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, do you think
I paid attention during res staff training?
let me just hold back this. Okay, I think it's good. Okay, so do you think a person's name is that sweet a sound?
Paula. Of course it is.
I don't think so. I get anxiety. Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on how someone says my name. But like,
if a stranger comes to me and says, Nate or Nathaniel, I'll be like, who are you? How do you know me?
I'm going to give you some stress. But if get I away were from say, me. Nate. Nate. Nate.
It just sounds like I'm in trouble.
Yeah, it does, right? Or you always, I think it's just like the depth of your voice, but you're always like, Paula.
Oh, Paula.
Exactly. It always sounds like you're about to lecture me. Paula.
Well, you know, both me and Dale over here, white straight men.
Oh my God.
Old souls of the 1930s.
I thought for a sec you were going to say, like, well, you know, probably am. All right, moving on. When people...
We got to make these speed rounds. We talk too much. Yeah. We're sitting at 32 minutes. Let's go.
When people to your way of thinking, one, the only way to get to the best of an argument is to avoid it. Two, show respect for the other person's opinions. Never say you're wrong. Three, if you are wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically. Four, begin in a friendly way. Five, get the other person to say yes, yes. Six, let the other person do a great deal of talking. Seven, let the other person feel that the idea is his or hers. Eight, try honestly to see things from the other's point of view. Nine, be sympathetic. 10, appeal to the nobler motives. 11, dramatize your ideas. 12, throw down a challenge. What's your favorite? Go.
I think the phrasing for number one, the only way, the best way to get out of an argument is to avoid it. Not great advice or whatnot, but I think the overall point he was trying to make is there's no need to escalate to yelling and ripping each other apart. If there is a disagreement, you should try to compromise, or if you can't do that, just try to avoid yelling at all points, because that's not going to help the situation either. It's just going to make you look like a fool.
Yep. I love number three. If you're wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically. I think that's great. Leads with humility. And then also, yeah, I want to get better. Yeah. At number seven, let the other person feel that the idea is his or hers.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Next section, be a leader. How to change people without giving offense or arousing resentment. Number one, begin with praise and honest appreciation. Number two, call attention to people's mistakes indirectly. Number three, talk about your own mistakes before criticizing the other person. Number four, ask questions instead of giving direct orders. Number five, let the other person save face. Number six,
praise the slightest improvement and praise every improvement. Be hearty in your approbation and lavish in your praise. Whatever. Give the other person a fine reputation to live up to. Second to last one, use encouragement. Make the fault seem easy to correct. Or the last one, make the other person happy about doing the thing you suggest.
I think my favorite thing is probably give the other person a fine reputation to live up to. I've used this constantly. But just like, just telling people like, now you seem like the type of person, blah, 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 insert feature you want them to
I think have. You can be better. Yeah. Let's take that ownership. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you just like give them the tools like you seem like insert quality that you want them to have.
Right.
So I know you won't have trouble with this. I think a way that we can highlight your natural talent is to do X, Y, and Z. And then they'll be like, yeah. You're right. I am this kind of person.
I really liked the let the other person save face. I mean, everyone's a human being. Everyone's going to make mistakes. Don't need to publicly ridicule them or shame them for making said mistakes. Give them a chance to fix it. You know, nothing that's good is going to come out of, you know, publicly humiliating anyone or something like that. I also think, like, let's just, like, positive leadership in general. Like, I think about my soccer team from high school, for example. That was not the case at all. Like, people weren't allowed to make mistakes or whatnot. And it's like, there's just no acceptance or understanding. Like, people cared if we lost games in high school soccer, which we're not professionals. We're not even semi-pro. No one's going to college for this. We're rural town soccer, you know. And so some people just care too much. Then for that reason, also just like literally got angry at other people for making mistakes or whatnot. So it's like, that's not going to make a positive growth environment for people to get better at their skill or craft, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, all right.
Pretty good.
Final thoughts?
Yeah, I think lead with humility and let your pure intentions showcase themselves. Final thoughts?
I thought his calls for empathy were pretty nice, and it demonstrated good leadership. I do think everyone could get something out of this book. I do wish everyone had these minimum skill sets out of this book and this knowledge. I think the world would be a better place with this. Sure, might be a little outdated, could be upgraded to 2020 standards, but for being written in the 1930s, not bad. Next week, we are doing a hot topic, talking about self-motivation, and next month's book club, if you want to join us for the next book that we're going to be reading, is called The Defining Decade by Meg J., PhD.
Oh, and our hot topic next week? Did we just announce that?
Yeah, wow. I just said it.
I missed it.
Sounds all right, like well, you're listening.
Thanks for tuning in. Make sure to follow us at Chatbox Podcast.
You can DM us on any social media platform to see your questions or challenges featured in the show.
If you would like to support this podcast, please leave a review of the show on iTunes and share this podcast with your friends. And with that,
it's either going to be a great time or a great story.
See you next week on Chatbox. Bye.